So last week, as we were finishing up the fourth chapter, the last verse of the fourth chapter says, "Therefore, let those who suffer according to the will of God commit their souls to Him, and in doing good as a faithful Creator." And that idea sort of leads itself. It's as we start into chapter 5, it would seem that maybe there's a change of topic here, and I don't think it really is. I think it is, as we continue talking about serving in chapter 4, it now talks a little bit about the elders and then our responsibility to the elders as well. So it picks up in the fifth chapter where it says, "The elders who are among you I exhort. I am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, nor as lords over those entrusted to you, but as examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears to you, you will receive a crown of glory that will not fade away." So as this chapter opens up, it begins to talk about this idea of the elders that are among you, I exhort. And again, he is pointing out that he is a fellow elder. He's a witness of those sufferings of Christ, the ones we have just talked about previously in the past two chapters. Those sufferings that we should see as an example of why we should live Christian lives and why we should not turn away when it becomes times of hardship and of trial. And he goes on to be talking about the idea that he will be a partaker of that glory that will be revealed. And it's a glory that we will all be looking forward to when this life is over. When he begins to talk about shepherding the flock, he's going to use this sort of three not but sort of statements. You are not to do it this way, but do it this way. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. But as we start doing that, is serving as that elder that would serve as an overseer, not for dishonest gain, eagerly doing it, but there's also some other things in terms of not being lords over those people that are entrusted to you, and that they need to be an example. And when we look in Timothy and Titus, and we look at those qualifications, those things that would outline to be, these are the qualifications of that elder. This is one of those reasons why those men must have those qualifications, is they need to be an example to the flock, and they need to lead in that way by example. And we see that as an overseer, as the shepherd of the flock, they're not the chief shepherd. The chief shepherd, of course, was Jesus. And when he appears, you will receive that crown of glory that does not fade away. I think when we look a little bit about the crown of glory, and as Paul sort of describes it, and sort of running that race and getting that imperishable crown, this idea that at least in those times, ancient times, when they had the wreath that was around their head, it would fade. It was not something that was eternal. And this is what Peter is pointing out here. That crown of glory that we are all striving for will never fade. Comments or questions as we kick off this first portion of the class this morning? Go for it, Jared. You do. We're down one today, so.
Sure.
Because of these difficulties that you have, the church needs you to be the leader that God has called upon you.
Right.
As an elder. And secondly, and I'll hush after this, I think it's interesting that Peter calls himself a fellow elder. Mm-hmm. Peter's an apostle.
Right.
Unfortunately, some of the religious world has crowned him the first pope and such. Right. Partaker of the glory that is to be revealed, he's really Yeah, right.
You know, the religious world has destroyed who Peter was, but Peter considers himself a fellow worker, a fellow elder.
Right, right.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, good point. Other thoughts or comments? Yeah, Larry? Sure.
How it's phrased here. It seems like the tense doesn't indicate a future tense per se, but a present tense would still leave it a future.
Sure.
So again, that's random thought.
Right, sure. And I think when you look at least the way it's sort of in the New King James here, as Larry pointed out, that will be revealed, but I also think it's his faith in knowing that it will happen as well. He is a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. As if you're sort of pointing out, yes, we can partake of it now, but this is also something that will happen. And that not that he's obtained it yet in the sense that Christ has not come back, but he is this partaker of the glory that will be revealed. And then as he finishes up there in verse 4, receive the crown of glory that doesn't fade away. So, other thoughts or comments? And of course, I think we've talked about this prior in others' classes about elders, and this will probably be talked about a little bit more in the new year when we potentially will have some classes on the eldership and appointing elders. I exhort the elders that are among you. And again, we're talking about a group of elders that work with that group. They are not a part of another group. They don't look over another group. It is the group that they are with, the ones that they are commanded that they have oversight, they are to care for, to tend to, are the ones that they have been allotted, not another group. And he asked them to shepherd the flock. And why do you think it's interesting that he says it to, or Peter says it this way? Can you think of an example in Peter, perhaps with Jesus, and how this shepherd the flock maybe has some background with Peter? If you love me, feed my sheep. Again, three times, and again, the wording a little bit changes there as it goes from feeding to tending, and that's the role of the eldership there, is to tend, to care for, to watch out for, and we're going to see some of the reasons here shortly why that's important, that they care for them. And then we look at this as the idea that Jared had pointed out, that this is a time of suffering, and this is probably therefore why the elders need to step up at this particular time. It's also a warning to those who are being tended to that we are to be in subjection to those elders. And we'll read that here in just a few minutes as well. And so I don't think, and again, maybe it's just the way in which the King James sort of moves from chapter 4 to chapter 5. It looks a little bit disjointed, but I think it is a continuation of what we've been talking about in this letter. And again, where the chapters break and things like that were put in by man, and so it wasn't necessarily this way. And so I think we can kind of look at it differently when we look at where those chapter breaks are and why is there a sort of disjointed conversation, and it's probably not in that way. But it is pertaining to those sufferings and the things that happen while you are suffering, and why the sort of eldership sort of should be those leaders that they need to be and examples to us. Larry?
Well, I think that he's trying to exhort and build up the shepherds.
Right.
Because when the work is done properly, you're thinking of others.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. I've never noticed this before until this morning, just looking, reading it, really. Why would he include, "I am a witness of the suffering of Christ"? It's a very interesting phrase, kind of unique, where he says, "I've watched Jesus suffer."
Right.
And there's a purpose in what he said. The danger in shepherding is when you get it
Sure, sure. Larry? And again, I think that, again, I think he's playing up these differences here, the sort of being, the compulsion to be sort of prodded into being an elder. We need someone else to serve. Can you do that for us? Versus someone who's willing there. And as Larry pointed out, it is something that is going to take of your time. But it's also, I would assume, a stress that you're going to be taking on as well. And so the idea that you need to understand and be willing to take on that load if you're going to serve as an elder. Of these other sort of three not buts, the other one, of course, is the idea of not doing it for a dishonest gain. Perhaps there's power in it. There's other ways. Again, it goes back to the heart and why that person would choose to lead a group of God's people and be a shepherd for them. Where is that motivation? Is it for gain that he might get? Or is it something that he would eagerly serve to do, willing to do it, and then not as lords, but as examples. And so it is not that they get the power and that they can now force everybody to do their will. This is the humbleness that they need to have, the character they need to have as being examples of the, to the flock. And again, and when we see that example, we see again the idea of the chief shepherd. What was the chief shepherd willing to do for his flock? He was willing to go to the cross. And so when we look at that example, someone who is willing to humble themselves, and we'll get into this in just a moment, in these next few verses in terms of this idea of being this sort of clothed in humility. When we look at verse 5, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to elders or your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble. I'm going to stop there with the clothed in humility. What's this idea of being clothed in humility? Okay. Sure. Sure, sure.
It's a concerted effort to practice humility. It's not something that comes naturally to us.
Dear.
When you're clothed with something, you're wrapped with it.
Okay.
You're engulfed by it. It is who you are. It becomes part of you. And I think that that's talking about our base character.
Sure. Thoughts or comments? I think part of this idea of being clothed with humility, another example that Jesus was able to give to his disciples when he was washing their feet, what did he do? He took off his outer garment and clothed around his waist the towel, which was an idea of being a servant. And so we have the chief shepherd, the one who had the most power, being able to surrender that and show humility to everyone, to his disciples. And so these leaders, we should be able to also be submissive to one another, clothed with humility, caring more for someone else than ourselves. So whether that is the office of the elder who should have that characteristic, but I think he's talking to all people. We should be submissive to one another. And that God is going to resist the proud. He's going to give grace to the humble. So we need to be willing to be clothed with humility. In verse 6, he says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all of your care upon him, for he cares for you. Thoughts or comments? Yeah, Jimmy?
Just sort of going back to that, you know, the original idea of exhorting the elders of mine. So
Sure. Right, right, sure. Other thoughts or, yeah, Larry? Sure. Good point. Other thoughts or comments? Yeah.
This idea of humbling yourselves, you know, so that he's going to exalt you in due time. I mean, sometimes we lose sight of that. The teaching of Jesus, like when he would say, you know, if someone slaps your cheek, you know, you slap them back. I mean,
right.
Let's get even. He just assaulted you, right? No, what are we encouraged to do? We're encouraged to offer other cheek to him. So, you know, this is a counterintuitive of what the world looks like. The same way, right? What do you mean humble myself? I need to go get what's mine. I need to show people who I am, and then I'm going to stand my ground, all this stuff. Where the wisdom from God says, no, humble yourself. In due time, I'm going to be the one that lifts you up. And
right.
Those things just don't make sense to the world, right?
Sure.
Someone slaps you, and we'll slap them back. Somebody wants to, he says, go that extra mile with them, or if they ask you for your cloak or whatever, give your tunic off. I mean, what he's trying to say is, I'm calling you to be a different kind of people.
Right.
Will be that different kind of people. Look what I have in store for you.
Sure.
I'm going to exalt you.
Right.
And would we trade being exalted by somebody on this earth over being exalted by God? I would.
Right, right.
I'd much rather him be the one that ultimately exalts me for whatever reason he chooses to do so.
Sure.
Than to choose the exaltation of the world.
That's right. Good point. Other thoughts or comments? And again, tied with this idea of humbling yourself under the mighty hand of God, the idea that let him exalt you, and let, as Jimmy pointed out, and let it, instead of letting man exalt you, but you also the idea of casting your cares upon him. So we can get, I think, in this life, either downtrodden or woe is me, those type, cast those cares on him. He will exalt you. Now, whether or not it is things that will be taken care of in this life, it's the crown of glory that we're striving for. And so the idea of casting all of your cares upon him, he cares for you. And again, we're talking about a time in the first century when the Christians were being sort of tortured and there was tribulation among them. And he's telling them that just wait. God cares for you. And I think he's trying to let them understand that while these physical things that might be going on in your life right now, and it sounds like, as we talked about last week, that was very much the case with some of the Christians at that time that were probably under great tribulation. Cast your cares on him. He cares for you. And that's just a reminder to those living at that particular time, but also for us as well. And then he tells them to be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. But may the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory by Christ Jesus, after you have suffered for a while, perfect, established, strengthened, and settled you, to him be the glory and the dominion forever and ever. Amen. So he starts off this particular section of verses here, all of the reasons why the elders need to be watchful, the elders need to shepherd their flock, we need to be submissive to one another, caring for one another, and it is because we have an adversary. And he points out here that it is the devil, it is Satan that is walking around. And what does it mean by walking around? He's looking all the time. He is walking around like that lion. And again, I think it's trying to bring it down to a sort of day-to-day sort of situation that we will face, and the idea that he is walking around looking for that opportunity. And we need to make sure we resist him. We need to make sure that we are aware of the fact, and not living and just not understanding that he is active and he is looking for us. And that we need to live each and every day understanding that he is doing that. And what is he looking to do if we use the connotation of the lion? He is looking to devour us. And we need to be watchful. I mean, if you knew someone was hunting you, you would probably live a little bit differently if you knew someone was hunting you each and every day. I think sometimes we might forget that, that there is someone that's actively seeking harm to us. And if we live sort of naive in that way, we might find ourselves in situations that we could have perhaps resisted had we thought about it sooner. Other thoughts or comments? Yeah. Go ahead. All right.
Back right into another trap.
Right,
you know?
Right.
You can't, he's prowling, so he's always looking for you. He's not standing still.
Sure.
You have to always be watchful for where he is.
Yeah, good point. Jimmy?
I think I've always looked at this verse more of this is a constant. We can always count on Satan being in our midst and looking for his opportunities. You know, with Jesus, he would say he would come back at a more convenient time, right?
Right. Sure.
I think in my estimation, he felt he had the ability to turn Jesus. He failed.
Right.
But he certainly said, I'll be back.
Right.
So if we think we've endured whatever it is, our test, there's still tests to come. But
right.
I think I've always said this is a constant, something you can always count on.
Mm-hmm.
I never looked at it from the perspective of context here. If you go back and think about the exhortation to the elders, who would be those people you mentioned that have power, they would have certain things that would be temptations to them, the use of that power, you know, the status, all the things that go with that. And then he goes the opposite end of the perspective. He goes, young people,
right.
You know, humble yourselves. There is a situation where young people, to Larry's point,
yeah.
They're always moving forward. They're assaulting. Let's go do this. Rush in before we think, those sort of things.
Right.
So it's interesting that this warning comes on the heels of the exhortation he's just given.
Right.
Because I think in those two instances, you have an opportunity for both of them. If they're not careful, Satan can have his way with them.
Right.
In two different places, two different experiences in life. One, this position of ruling over people in a way that God has required them to do or set in place. And then these younger people sort of not giving the devil his due. And
right.
So it is interesting that it follows in both examples.
Sure. Good point. Yeah, Jared?
Against the devil is a two-pronged attack, according to this verse.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't have one without the other. The idea of being sober, a lot of times we think of not drunk. Well, it includes that, but it's a whole lot more than
right.
that. It's free from anything that might cloud our mind, cloud our judgment, get in the way of us being able to recognize what the devil is doing.
Right.
And then being watchful, always on the alert. But you can't have one without the other. You
sure.
can clear your mind of all those things that are in your way, but if you're not ready, you still might see.
Good point. Yeah, Ashley?
Kind of piggyback off Jared, too, when I see the verse now it talks about resisting the devil,
Sure.
And that's what he does to us as well. And he tries to mix enough truth sometimes to lead us down a path that are going to lead us to destruction. And so part of this resisting him is having that sword of the spirit, the shield of faith, all those things that Ephesians writer tells us to be able to resist him. What I love about this, in another verse he says, it's like this, it says, resist him and he will flee from you. It says, draw near to God and he will draw near to you.
Right. Good point. Other thoughts or comments? Yeah. Other thoughts or comments? He goes on here in sort of 9 through sort of 10 here, the idea of what we talked about before, the sufferings, and again, he's telling them that you're not alone. The sufferings are happening, he says, sort of world round, that the Christians at this particular time, I think we can look to our time today, we might suffer differently. We've talked about that in previous classes. But it is going to be something that you're going to suffer a while. But it's going to be perfect, it's going to establish, it's going to strengthen. So we need to look at those things as we suffer to understand that it will strengthen us, and we need to strengthen one another as we submit to another one another. But to him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. And then the last section of verses here in this particular chapter, by Silvanus, our faithful brother, as I consider him, I have written to you briefly, exhorting and testifying that this is the true grace of God in which you stand. She who is in Babylon, elect together with you, greets you, also does Mark, my son. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Peace to you all who are in Christ Jesus. Amen. A couple of different things here that I think people tend to look at and bring up, at least in sort of a... Does verse 12 mean that Peter didn't write this himself? Is it because he mentioned Silvanus here? I don't think it necessarily means that at all. Could Silvanus have physically written something that Peter sort of transcribed to him or dictated to him? I don't know if it necessarily matters there. The Silvanus that most people think this is talking about is Silas, is who we assume this is talking about. And then the idea of Mark. Mark became very instrumental after the sort of time in which he came back. Paul was wanting him as well at the end of his life. We believe that's the Mark that it is talking about. And then she who is in Babylon, we talked about this when we started off the class, the idea of Babylon, whether this is talking about Rome, whether it's talking about, I think we kind of dismissed the idea that this is Babylon in the Euphrates. But again, the idea that elect together, they greet you, so does Mark. Again, this is how a lot of times the writers of these letters sort of close their remarks in mentioning people that those people would know and care for. And then greet one another with a kiss of love or a holy kiss. And again, in a way in which the Christians should care and love for one another, this was sort of a greeting among them in terms of how they would make sure that they showed that those who followed Christ, they loved one another. And this was one of the ways in which they could display that is in terms of how they would greet one another. Any other thoughts or comments before we close here? Ashley?
Yeah.
And again, Peter has already mentioned this again, as Ashley pointed out, that Christ is that great example of one who suffered. If we think we're suffering right now, and again, we can't say that we are suffering the way the first century Christians did, but even them have to then look to Christ to see, look at what he did for us. Look how much he suffered, and he was innocent. And so now that is our sort of example to us today, is the one who has already suffered for us, put this to bed, and is our example, and is what how we have that crown of glory because of his suffering. Any other thoughts or comments? Yeah, Jimmy?
Well, Timothy said, when I used a couple instances to remind us that, you know, isn't it appropriate that Peter, with all his challenges mm-hmm. and all his shortcomings, he is who God has chosen to offer these words
right.
to us. And I can't help but think of this idea of being sober and being on the alert. I mean, did Peter have some words to say?
Any other thoughts or comments? About to catch the second bell here. Next week, Lord willing, we'll start the second epistle by Peter. We'll begin there in the first chapter of 2 Peter. So thank you for your comments this morning.